This is Torah. The parasha called Mishpatim, rulings, ordinances. We will jump right in to Exodus 22, verse 4. If a person causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed over, or lets his animal loose to graze in someone else's field, he is to make restitution from the best produce of his own field and vineyard. Now, once again, the Lord is laying the framework for a civilized society. He has brought his people out of slavery, and he is instructing them on how to be just to one another, how to be equitable, fair, honest, taking responsibility for your actions, for your mistakes. So these principles that are within the fabric of these commandments are principles that are timeless, that apply to what we do today. As a matter of fact, many of these are part of our own legal system. Restitution, going before a judge for a ruling, taking responsibility when you've caused another one to have loss. If a fire is started, verse 5, and spreads to thorns, so that stacked grain, standing grain, or a field is destroyed, the person who lit it must make restitution. If a person entrusts a neighbor with money or goods, and they are stolen from the trustee's house, then if the thief is found, he must pay double. But if the thief is not found, then the trustee must state before God that he did not take the person's goods himself. In every case of dispute over ownership, whether of an ox, a donkey, a sheep, clothing, or any missing property, where one person says, "This is mine," both parties are to come before God, and the one whom God condemns must pay the other one double. Now, I would presume that one of the judges, remember, there were appointed alongside Moshe leaders of tens, fifties, 100s, 1000s. So I presume that it is God that is breathing wisdom through his spirit into these judges, making decisions. Imagine if our own judges in the United States were led by the Spirit of God. Verse 9, if a person trusts a neighbor to look after a donkey, an ox, or a sheep, or any animal, and it dies, is injured, or is driven away unseen, then the neighbor's oath before Adonai that he has not taken the goods will settle the matter between them. The owner is to accept it without the neighbors making restitution. So this is where we would derive the idea of taking an oath, swearing before God, or swearing on the Bible. You get sworn in to office. You get sworn in to being part of a jury. This is where it stems from. The idea of the separation of religion and government, church and state, is really impossible. It's only something that people can argue about. But in reality, the laws of God are already intertwined with our own laws. He has already left his fingerprints. on the way we do things. The laws of the land come from him, ultimately, and they're derived from the Bible. And that's what we're reading here right now. Taking oaths, being sworn in. And keep in mind, too, that all the mention of ox and sheep and animals, these were their possessions. These were how they made a living. These things are how they accumulated wealth. But if it was stolen from the neighbor, verse 11, he must make restitution to the owner. If it was torn to pieces by an animal, the neighbor must bring it as evidence, and then he doesn't need to make good the loss. If someone borrows something from his neighbor, and it gets injured or dies with the owner not present, he must make restitution. If the owner was present, he need not make good the loss. If the owner hired it out or rented it out, the loss is covered by the hiring fee, the rental fee. If a man seduces a virgin, now verse 15 changes course a bit and moves into personal relationships, human relationships. If a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged to be married and sleeps with her, he must pay the bride price for her to be his wife. So what this tells us is that sexual relations before marriage are not acceptable to Adonai. That if a couple gets together and they are not married, they are to be married right after that. The paying of the bride price for her to be his wife, these were ancient practices, dowries, payment to families. Marriages were typically arranged. So we see the precedent being set for morality within the culture of God. Sex is set apart for marriage. Verse 16, but if her father refuses to give her to him, he must pay a sum equivalent to the bride price for virgins. So, if a young man wants to have relations with a young woman and they're not married, it's going to cost that young man. So again, the motivation is moving the couple, moving the young man towards the marriage commitment. That's God's ideal. Verse 17, you are not to permit a sorceress to live. Now, the practice of sorcery, the dark arts, magic arts, what we would call witchcraft, many times involved the use of substances, mixtures, natural mixtures, hallucinogenics, what we would consider drugs, which people didn't fully understand, I think, in those days, and it seemed to give the sorcerer power. Consulting the dead, fortune telling, astrology, all these things are part of this idea of sorcery. So clearly God is saying that is not how you will make decisions for the future, by consulting the dead, by consulting the stars. I am the one who will give you wisdom in making decisions. I am the one who will direct your future and direct your steps. So again, a clear and strong response to a person that attempts to lead the people of God away from his authority into the dark authority, spiritually. Verse 18, whoever has sexual relations with an animal must be put to death. Verse 19, anyone who sacrifices to any god other than Adonai alone is to be completely destroyed. Now, as I brought up in the past, the punishments involved, the capital punishment that is involved, is designed, again, because these people were coming from no law. And through the harshness of the punishments involved here, they will learn what is important to God and how to live their lives. The proposed punishments are designed not for cruelty, but to show the people how to live so that they will get the most out of life and experience the true and full blessings of God. So they are harsh responses, but they are designed to limit the negative repercussions of walking outside of the protection of God. Verse 20, you must neither wrong nor oppress a foreigner living among you. For you yourselves were foreigners in the land of Egypt. So now laws concerning how we are to treat our fellow man, especially a person that is from another country, another area, that is living among the children of Israel, that they would not be oppressed. In other words, that they wouldn't be overcharged or treated wrongly within business decisions or transactions, cheated out of money, oppression, or wronging them, treating them unlawfully or persecuting them. So foreigners were to be treated with the same dignity as a citizen of Israel. And the reason is, he says to the children of Israel, is that you were once strangers and foreigners. And I might add that the people of Israel have consistently been foreigners in many lands around the world, even to this day. So we, of all people, should have empathy for those that are also displaced from their homeland. You are not to abuse any widow or orphan. Verse 21. If you do abuse them in any way and they cry to me, I will certainly heed their cry. So the widow and the orphan or the fatherless, they have a special place in the heart of God. And heaven forbid, a person wrongs a widow, where the modern day widow, I would say, is a single mother, or an orphan, a child that is alone without parents. God has a special eye looking out for their needs. Later in the New Testament, in the book of Yaakov or James, he says that pure and undefiled religion is to care for the widow and orphan in their time of distress, clearly rooted in these Torah principles that we're reading. He goes on about the widow and the orphan. My anger will burn and I will kill you with the sword. Your own wives will be widows and your own children fatherless. So again, the idea of retribution and punishment are put forth to the people of Israel so that they will follow. There had to be boundaries established because there were no boundaries. Verse 24, if you loan money to one of my people who is poor, you are not to deal with him as would a creditor, and you are not to charge him interest. So generosity, being encouraged, not looking to gain interest from someone who is poor among the people of Israel. This word interest, it literally means biting, like the biting of a snake. From the Midrash, it says, interest which bites by making a small wound in a person's foot like a snake bite. The person does not feel the wound, and suddenly it spreads and swells up as far as his crown. So it is with interest. He does not feel it and is not noticeable until the interest accumulates and it costs him a considerable sum of money. So no need to charge interest to someone who is poor. Again, God instilling into his people a merciful heart and a generous hand. Verse 25, if you take your neighbor's coat as collateral, you are to restore it to him by sundown, because it is his only garment. He needs it to wrap his body. What else does he have in which to sleep? Moreover, if he cries out to me, I will listen, because I am compassionate. This is a father teaching his children about his values. And he values compassion. Don't take advantage of a poor person. Don't overlook their needs. What else does he have? God is saying to them. Compassion being instilled in the hearts and minds of his people. Torah 101 Daily.